Cebu and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present one of the great concert films of all time, Jazz on a Summer's Day, a documentary of the 1958 Newport Jazz Festival. Jazz on a Summer's Day captures the music, the crowd, and the essence of such jazz greats as Louis Armstrong, Thelonious Monk, Jerry Mulligan, and Anita O'Day. Jazz on a Summer's Day, Thursday, August 14, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Old Rockin' Chair's got me.
Old Rockin' Chair got your father.
KBOO Community Radio proudly co-sponsors the Surf Rider Summer Soiree on Thursday, July 17th from 6 p.m. until 1 a.m. at Holocene, located at 1001 Southeast Morrison. This fundraiser opens with an ocean art show and silent auction, followed by a screening of the surf film Seven Signs. Then the reggaetronic five-piece band Everyday Prophets takes center stage at 10 p.m. Again, that's the Surf Rider Summer Soiree on July 17th. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, July 15th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We're late starting today because why? Because we're trying to call, I've been trying to call the International Middle East Media Center, one of KBOO's own. Syed Banura works, of course, for them, and as do a handful of dedicated, courageous people. It's very difficult to call in to Jerusalem right now, but we'll keep trying. And eventually, Mazen Khamsia will be joining us to talk about what is going on. I have been beyond speechless. Talking about it has been very difficult for me. I think it's an extremely complicated situation, which has been simplified by dunderheads, for dunderheads, packaged and sold to the general public. The package in no way, shape, or form resembles the truth on the ground. In any case, Israel has accepted Egypt's proposal for a cessation of hostilities with the Gaza Strip. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office said that there's so much more here than meets the eye. Netanyahu's office does say that they've accepted this, and the proposal envisions a ceasefire beginning it right away. Back. In actuality, it's called for border crossings to Gaza to be opened, meaning Rafah, of course, with the movement of people and goods to be facilitated once the security situation becomes stable on the ground. And that is as they define it, as defined by Egypt and Israel. We'll be speaking about that in just a minute. I've got a couple more headlines for you. Prospectors from Texas Oil Company, Dan A. Hughes won't be drilling throughout the Big Cypress Swamp watershed anytime soon. That means diminished revenues for the old Florida plutocrats, Baron Collier, and one fewer threat to the Florida panther and other species. One less worry for Collier County residents concerned about toxic contamination of the environment. The Texans at least mineral rights, and they were stopped by a coalition of activist groups. This is reported on the Earth First website, and the first time in 14 years America's crude oil consumption was higher than China's in 2013. The nation's demand for gasoline rose, and the trend is continuing in 2014, apparently, in this gleeful new oil rush to the Bakken and deposits. People seem to have forgotten that, forgotten in Bakken, I love it, that the whole point of the activist movement here is to reduce carbon emissions. And we were fighting against oil trains, the bomb trains. We're fighting against new pipelines. We're fighting against terminals. But let's get back to the basics, because the struggle really is, in the end, against the fossil fuel and the carbon emissions that are pumped out into the air by the ton every day. We're going to go now to Robert Naiman, who's waiting patiently on the line, because the situation, as we all know, in Gaza is horrific beyond comprehension. Good morning, Robert. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Good to be with you.
Well, so do you have any sense that this ceasefire that Egypt has put forth suddenly that they came up with this in a sudden fashion that it would appear, or is this something that's in the works? And how on earth can people stand by while Israel slaughters civilians run spell check on the ceasefire agreement? What actually is going on behind the scenes?
Well, so there have been demands around the world from around the world for a week for there to be a new ceasefire, and particularly on Egypt to step up, because it has historically the Egyptian government has brokered ceasefires in the past and has some good relations with both sides. The Egyptian government has changed. The last time the Egyptian government was involved in brokering a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, the Egyptian government was under the democratically elected government of Mohamed Morsi, who was more sympathetic to Hamas and people in Gaza, and put forward a ceasefire proposal that reflected demands of people in Gaza for an easing of the blockade. Now, the present Egyptian government, produced by the military coup, the government of Sisi, is very anti-Hamas. It's arguably as anti-Hamas as Israel is, and was reported to be encouraging the Israeli government and its military offensive. So it's a step forward that the Egyptian government is now finally, as people have demanded, pushing for ceasefire. But they put forward a ceasefire proposal that they did not vet with Hamas, and doesn't include some of the things that Hamas is pushing for in terms of a more permanent and sure economic opening of the border crossing, in terms of a release of prisoners, Hamas prisoners that Israel has rearrested in the West Bank after they're released in the prisoner transfer. But it's not clear that this ceasefire proposal can do the job. It hasn't so far, but that doesn't mean that it won't, or some tweaking of it won't. It's a step forward, I think, that there is an Egyptian ceasefire proposal. It's a step forward that the U.S. government is pushing for ceasefire. It's a step forward that the Israeli government agreed to the Egyptian proposal. We have a petition to move on that we put up last week, saying the U.S. government should use all diplomatic efforts to push for a ceasefire. So we're happy to see this step, even though it's not completed yet, and we think the U.S. should keep pushing. It has a lot of levers on the Israeli government, and it has indirect levers on Hamas. You know, the head of Hamas lives in Qatar. The U.S. is talking to Iran about Iran's nuclear problems. No question that Iran has influence on Hamas. So the U.S. has relationships with people that can push both sides. The Egyptian proposal is for both sides to stop shooting immediately and then to go to Cairo for talks to try and bring about a long-term agreement. So the I think in order for a long-term agreement to be stable, it needs to include lifting the economic blockade on Gaza and opening all of Gaza's ports to movement and commerce.
Netanyahu is arguably not going to be an honest broker in any of this. We've seen in the past where he has virtually betrayed the trust of the United States. It's Israel's main and virtually only ally. One of the questions that always comes up is settlements, and I just wondered if there's anything that you know of in how that will be addressed, because it seems that every time that we see any sense of a forward movement on any of this, is Israel turns around and announces they're building 1,500 more settlers' houses, right bang on the heels of whatever else of a positive nature has just transpired. It's blown out of the water by the settlements, and for that matter, the settlers who are intransigent and are not going to be moved by any of this. How is that going to be factored in?
I think it's crucial here. I mean, I think one lesson that we should take from the current events in Israel and Gaza is that the independence of the Israeli government from the United States has been greatly exaggerated. The Israeli government is Netanyahu particularly very good at saying, you know, nobody's going to push us around, nobody's going to tell us what to do. The UN Security Council, with the support of the United States on Saturday, unanimously passed a resolution calling for a ceasefire. And yesterday, last night and this morning, the Israeli government agreed to a ceasefire. 2 to 3 days. That's how long it took for the Israeli government to comply with the non-binding resolution unanimously passed by the United Nations Security Council with the support of the United States. Now, there's not a ceasefire now. So obviously we should not be happy. The killing hasn't stopped. But my point is, the United States government, when it wants, has tremendous influence on the Israeli government. And that happens when there's sufficient political pressure. Unfortunately, the issue of the settlements doesn't create the same kind of political pressure on the United States and Israel that people's TV screens with, you know, the Israeli Air Force killing Palestinian kids in Gaza does. If we could generate that kind of political pressure on the U.S. and the Israeli government, we could produce a similar kind of movement. This is why I think things like, you know, it was just weeks ago that the Presbyterian Church USA voted to divest from three companies involved in the Israeli occupation. Caterpillar, that makes the bulldozers that killed Rachel Corrie and knocks down Israeli homes and destroys knocks down Palestinian homes, destroys Palestinian olive trees, Motorola Solutions, and Hewlett Packard. So we should watch these dynamics and don't believe the hype that the Israeli government is an independent actor that can do whatever it wants. It's not true. And when the sufficient political pressure is put on the U.S. and Israeli governments, the Israeli government moves.
So I guess listeners know you know what to do, right? Everybody out there listening to this, we've been speaking with Robert Neyman at Just Foreign Policy, an exceptional source and resource for news and analysis on many of these questions. Robert, you want to just let people know a bit more about Just Foreign Policy before we let you go today?
You can look us up at www.justforeignpolicy.org. You can find our petition, our ceasefire petition at Move On by just going to petitions.moveon.org and searching for Gaza or justforeignpolicy.org/ceasefire Israel Palestine. And people can find my writing at Huffington Post, Truth, Doubt, and Common Dreams.
Thank you so much for that. We're very, very grateful to you for joining us today on Air Cascadia. This has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, July 15th, 2014. Janet Anderson engineered the show today. Thanks for that, Janet. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Flashpoints, Israelis fire warning missiles at a Gaza City geriatric hospital, sending staff and patients into a life-threatening panic. Meanwhile, the death toll of Palestinians nears the 200 mark, with 1,400 wounded and 34 children among the dead. Also, we speak to an international law scholar about Israel's commission of potential crimes against humanity. And more on the kids coming in from Central America, fleeing for their lives. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Israeli warplanes fired a series of warning rockets at the Al-Wafa Geriatric Hospital in Gaza City on Friday, sending patients and nurses into a panic. According to the executive director of the hospital, interviewed by Nora Barris-Friedman, there is no safe place to move the patients